Okay, I want to thank you too for everyone who came out here. I'm surprised that so many of you came. And I'm happy to see the performance here. My story begins actually at my birth. I was born in 1932 in a place called Vincennopo, which is about 50, 60 kilometers north of Warsaw. And just sorry to say that my mother did not live very long, because when my brother was born 5 years after me, she died shortly after that. So my dad probably did have a pretty hard time himself to make a go of things. And we certainly weren't rich or had too much, but which was probably just as well, because 2 years later, my mother died in 37. Oh yes, I still remember we were sitting by her bed when she was dying. And I also got the chance to go to the cemetery. They always opened the coffin once more before they would put it into the ground. And they had a real odd custom. They would put a couple of pennies on their eyes. One penny on each eye, or groschen they call it. So I always think of that, and I never really know how loving my mother was, because I never really experienced it. I was only 5 years old when she died. So we were a small family then, without my mother. It was just my dad and my sister, myself, and I had a little brother. And in 1939, when Hitler had taken power and he had overrun Poland, and all I remember is a motorbike came by into our yard with two or three soldiers, I'm not even sure, it had a sidecar. And we were told that we would shortly have to move out of here, because Hitler, in his great wisdom, he wanted to put us onto different farms in Western Prussia, which was maybe about 180 kilometers away from Warsaw. So in 1939, we packed our wagon and we moved towards Grounds. It's called Grudziądz in Polish. And I'm not exactly sure how long the trip was, because I think we also were on a train for a bit. So it didn't take that long, maybe 2-3 days. And we arrived at our destination, and we landed on another small farm. What I know happened is that they would drive off the Polish farmers and would put the people of German descent on there. So it was really not that good a feeling, or couldn't have been a good feeling for my dad, because I thought it was kind of awful, even as a 7-year-old. But anyway, we had a relative quiet time on that farm, because those were the 5 years during wartime, 39 to 45. And what I experienced, I started school. Remember, in those days, we still wrote on this tablet, with the kind of carbon pen. I don't know what it was, because it was scratch on it. But then later we wrote with a quill. Do any of you know a quill, what it looks like? Have you ever seen a fountain pen? It has a nice quill on it. But we had a quill, and then we had a holder, and and we would stick it in there and learn how to write. And that was very messy because you had to dip it into an inkwell right in front of you. So it and we started out with a Gothic, what do you call it now? Yeah. Well, the letters were in a different form. So the ABC was in Gothic, the whole thing. But it wasn't long. I think we only did that for 2 years or something, and then we changed over to the Latin way of writing. So we had three or four different teachers, and the first one, he was a very young person and he was very strict. If you did something wrong, you went out into another room and they'd have a rod and they'd give you a spanking. And those were sometimes really embarrassing moments because my German sounded somewhat different too. Because we spoke a low German, and it must not have sounded very good to the people that we lived with after we had moved. Because those were mostly German people that lived in that area, and they had a different accent and so forth. So it took a while for me to get adjusted, but I picked up the language really well, and I got pretty good in German. Actually, the teacher would commend me sometimes for being such a good reader, and he was very encouraging. That was our last teacher, and he was very encouraging to be with us, you know. We also had a chance because we had a neighbor whose son was about my age, and they would go to church. I think my dad really didn't go to church that much in those days. But we would go from school, we would go attend these classes. There was a pastor in the area which was about 3 kilometers away. And he would give some classes. So I still remember that. I always liked pastors because they always seemed to have a touch of compassion. You could feel it. There was a difference between those people and the regular teachers. So we had some instructions. My mother, my dad had gotten remarried in 1940. And then another boy was born in 42, which was my youngest brother, became my youngest brother. And unfortunately, he has died too already, so I kind of miss him. But when we did actually pretty well on that farm, because we had built up, my stepmother was a hard worker. And she would look after the cows and the pigs and the chickens and so forth around the yard. And we did really well. So we built that farm up. It was really a nice place. And then in 1945, that's when the Russians were coming towards us. So in 1945, in January, we had to pack our wagons again, and we were supposed to go westward. And I think our goal was to just get out of the area that used to belong to Poland, and it was the Oder River. It's called Odra now, and first of all, we had to cross the Weichsel River before we could go on. And in January, the end of January was very cold. There was snow on the ground, and I just there was no room on the wagon, so I had to walk just behind him. And we were standing and waiting to cross the Weichsel River, which there were no more bridges around, so we had to go over the ice. And apparently the ice was made harder, was made thicker by putting water on or something. I don't know what they had done. But anyway, we had to pass, that we had to cross at that particular place. On the other side where the river banks were fairly steep, they had another team of horses which would be put in front of your wagon, and you'd have to, it was pulled up on the other side. When we got to the other side, I remember there was a place where the people would gather, and it was dark. It was over, it was crowded. The people were running all over the place. We lost our little dog. So it was not a very pleasant experience. But I had to go to the bathroom once. I remember that. And I had never experienced a flush toilet. You don't know what that's like. We always had outhouses. So I went into this bathroom, and I was standing there looking, but then finally I did my job, and then I looked and I saw this chain hanging down from the top, and I pulled it, and I thought, kind of knew that that must flush the stuff down, but it overflowed. Everything was plugged, so as soon as I could get out of there, I just got out. It was terrible. It scared me so much. So from there, we finally got onto the road, and we built up a 7-kilometer wagon train. That's how long it was, all the wagons that were going. It was cold, it was miserable for a while, until we got later into February, maybe the end of February, then things would get a little better, and we had to cross the next river, which was the Oder. And there they were.
How many people do you think were in
that wagon? I don't know. It's hard to, must have been a couple of thousand people at least. A lot of people went by train, the ones that didn't have a farm or any other transportation. And so we were on the way westward, and I still remember some of the things that happened, because nights we would always try to find a place to sleep, and it wasn't easy because who wanted to put up with us, because we didn't have a chance to get properly cleaned up, washed, or anything like this. We probably smelled. We probably had lice already after 6 weeks or so. It was really bad. And so I could understand why people didn't want to put us up. But anyway, when we crossed the Oder River, there had been some air strikes, and there some people were killed. They were lying on the side of the road, covered up. I still remember seeing some blood, and I think some of the horses were killed as well. So, but we got across the river, and then there was some wooded area. That's where we hid out for a while. I remember some of the women would cook a kind of soup out in flour and water and mix something, some dough, and then they made these. It was a type of noodle, and they would cook it up on an open fire. So we had something hot to drink. Those are the things that I remember. But then later, I think a couple of days later, we found the place where the people were really nice to us. Although we had to sleep in the barn, which was kind of the feeding area. It was a place with straw and stuff. So we slept in there, but they had made breakfast for us the following day. They gave us a nice breakfast. And those people were, that was the first family that kind of took a personal interest in the people that were fleeing. So it was kind of nice to have that experience. But then we still had to travel quite a ways before we got to our destination. Because I think the total time was about 10 weeks on the road or something. Because we stayed, when we finally arrived, we were near Hanover. Any one of you know Hanover? Maybe some of you know the name, yeah. And that's the area where we'd be between Hanover and Braunschweig. Those were the two largest cities, and we were about halfway in between. It was 20 kilometers to Hanover and 16 to Braunschweig. So those were the two cities that were close to us. But when we got there, and the mayor of the town, he had to see to it that we all found a place to stay, to live. And the one farmer, he was actually a dealer. He was dealing with horses and cattle and stuff like that. They showed us a chicken barn. They thought we could maybe take quarters in there. So my dad was really getting angry at these people. But then finally the mayor found a place, and we got three rooms in one of the farmhouses, and that's where we were put up, and that was actually a good place. I got to know their son, who was about my age, but there were still some airstrikes. We still kind of hid out in the basement sometimes. But then I think it was just around Easter time when the Americans came in on the jeep. These big, burly, some of the dark soldiers, you know, the black soldiers. Boy, they were really big fellows. And they were driving through this little town with their jeep. And that's when we know that Germany had lost the war. It was already April, and I think it was in August, right, when Germany capitulated officially.
April?
Was it April already? See, so it was shortly after that. For some reason, August, I was thinking of August, I don't know why. But anyway, then we had to start school again, and I kind of got into fifth grade or sixth grade, and I had to catch up because I was already seven when I started school in Western Prussia, and here we had lost time, so I went up and I had to work pretty hard. Eventually I could skip a grade, and I still made it to grade 8 and got my Entlassungszeugnis, my what do you call the final exam, and then it was up to me to find a trade or to find some kind of occupation that I would take on. I had to learn a trade. So there was nothing much available. I had wanted to maybe be a cabinet maker or something, but there was nothing available at all. So my chance was to go into a potash mine. So I took a job in the potash mine as an apprentice, was a three-year course, and then when you graduated, you were kind of like a journeyman. You got your papers and everything. So that took 3 years. We had to go to school once a week for 8 hours a week. We had to learn, there was a little bit of geology and some arithmetic, and we had to write some essays and stuff like that. We had to study the layers of the earth, allodium, dilodium. I don't know if any one of you had to go through something through this. But after 3 years, I got my papers and was fine. I worked for another year or 2 years. I worked underground. At 16, you got a chance to go underground. And you also got more money. And also you got additional ration cards, because we still had rations in those days. And these rations cards allowed us to buy butter, extra meat and bread, which the regular people didn't get it. So we actually did quite well in those few years that I was there. But I should tell you one thing, because before that, when I was still going to school, I was in grade 7 or something, there came this car, jeep came by to the potato field. We were picking potato bugs. Anyone know what potato bugs are? They're these yellow bugs on the potato leaves. And so we had to do that as a school. The whole school was out there picking potato bugs. And all of a sudden this jeep arrives, and they wanted me to go with them. So they talked to the teacher, and here they took me along. And what they wanted, because we had a horse that was a beautiful horse. It was like the golden palomino. It was a beautiful horse. And he was at the mayor's care. I guess he used it for his purposes. And so I had to take that horse about 4 kilometers away from where we lived. And then he would give the officer who rode the horse, just for fun, for an hour or so, he would give me chocolate, he would give me occupation money. That's what we had in those days, occupation money. And so I pretty good time. But then I go back to the mining business, and I worked there for five years, almost 6 years, I think. But I didn't like it at all. So I finally said, I'm going to quit here. I just don't like it. So I tried to go back into the army or something, or go to South America. But then in the end, all that was left for me was Canada, because the immigration to the United States was closed. So I took the chance and applied to go to Canada, and it was through Lutheran World Relief. So they accepted me, and they said I could go to Canada, but I'd have to work a whole year on the farm. And if I did that, if I would stick it out for a whole year, they would give me the fare back that I had to pay to go to come to Canada. So I promised to do that, and which I actually did. I worked one summer on there on the grape farm, and a couple of winters on the dairy farm. So I had a little bit of experience working on the farm. The farm, that one farm where I worked, I had to sleep in the granary. There were four hired men. And the two of us were single, so we had to sleep in the granary. So we had one of these pot stoves right in the middle of the granary. And when you heated it up, it really got hot in that little place. And my your boots in the morning, they were frozen to the floor, because when the stove would go out, it would start to freeze inside. There was no insulation in that place. So I put up with this for the winter, and then the following winter I had to go to another farm for the winter. And then finally I also learned the language. Those few months on the farm, because the two farmers, the dairy farms, they were English only. They spoke English only. And so I pretty well had to learn the language. And so we finally got, we had to go for examinations, and we had to go, it was kind of like where they examine you and give you your immunization. What do you call it again? Immunizing, yeah. And so finally we were ready to go, so I could go home, because we had to stay there while all this had to happen. And then I could finally go home and wait for the time to board the ship, which took, I think, 2 weeks or something like that. So we went from Bremerhaven, we boarded the ship, and I think it took about 10 days to get across, to come to. I think we ended up in Montreal. I was going to look at where we, Montreal or Quebec.
We ended up in Quebec too.
I think, I don't know how we got to Montreal, because it, but anyway, we had to go by train from there. We had to go by train to my parents. That's where I would go to the farm. Yeah, so that's when I experienced all this work on the farm. I just got to backtrack a little bit. But it was a good experience. So when I came to Canada too, after I finished my work on the farms, I came back to the city. The first farmer had asked me if I want to stay with him for the winter. I would also have to stay for the next following summer. So I said, I would really like to try the city. So he was taking treatments for cancer. He had, I don't know, cancer of the throat or something. And so he went to Winnipeg for treatments under cobalt. Do you remember a cobalt machine or something? But, which was really not that great thing for him, and in the end it didn't help him anyway. But he took me, and then I got boarded room at a German, with a German lady. They had come to Canada a few years before I did. So they put me up, and I had to pay $10 a week for board and room. Actually, that was a good time for me, because that's where I lived my younger years, up till I was 9 years with them. But I did join the Lutheran congregation, which was very close to that house. So the first, I always kind of wanted to be with people that would have the same interest, that would have an interest in our faith, in our Lutheran faith. So I went Yeah. Yeah, I went to the church that one evening because I heard there was a meeting. But it was the wrong one. It was the Luther League, and they were the younger crowds from 14 to 20 or something. So she told me then that they were meeting on a different night. So I went that particular night, and there was this lady that came out, and she was so friendly, and they really received me like somebody really special. They made you feel special. There were about maybe 30 young people had come together there. And that was a group that developed into a real group for the congregation. We did some visitations as a group. We did surveys for the church, for the Lutheran church. Whenever they wanted to build a new church somewhere, a new building, they would sometimes have a survey before they would go on. So we went, did some of that work. We did quite a bit in those days. We also took classes, and like I got roped into teaching Sunday school as well. So we took lessons and teaching lessons for Sunday school. And yeah, I learned quite a bit, and I had to read a lot. So reading came very easy for me after a while. Because then the pastor had asked me to read the lessons, and he asked me to do all these things. And yeah, I became a really active member of the congregation. So we had actually quite a group of young people that came together. We had good times. We had socials. We had one social a month and one business meeting a month. It was actually a very good life in Winnipeg to start out with. And then eventually, I got to know people, and eventually I found my wife also. She came from that same congregation. And she always she took more interest in me than any other gal. Even though I thought she was maybe quite the right girl for me, because I was looking for something, you know, that really would really grabbed me, because I remember my teen years, I had a girl that really interested me, and I was so in love with her that sometimes I couldn't sleep. Those were tough times. And I thought I would have to have part of that same feeling again, but it never came. But I always had a good conversation with her. I always could talk to her about things, and she had a very good friend, and I would go over to their place for Sunday dinner, and it was just a good time. And sometimes we would get together some 50 young people. You know, we had a large group. It was a thriving congregation because all the immigrants that had come in from Germany, most of them, all these Lutherans gathered together right at that congregation. So it was very good for the pastor. And the pastor took a special interest in us as well. I still remember the first time I went to visit that church. And on the way out, I had gone there with my friend, my buddy. And on the way out, he greeted us in this special way, and you know, it was like almost like a compliment, you know, that he paid us, that we had come to this congregation to visit the church. Yeah, and then I joined the church, and that's when I became so active after that. So that was really a good experience for me. Although Sunday school classes sometimes I found a little difficult because I had gotten to know my wife, but there was no thought of getting married yet because I didn't feel that I was ready to get married. It took a long time. I think I'd known her about 6-7 years before I finally decided that maybe we should get married. Because she was 3 years older, actually, than I was. So in 1962, we got married. And she had always wished for 2 boys. She got her 2 boys. They're already 50 years old now, 51 and 52. And they both live in Calgary as well. But you probably know, most of you probably know that my wife died in 2014. And I still miss her very much. I find it sometimes really difficult to live alone. But I'm glad I am here in this congregation where we have a lot of people that take great interest in what they believe in and what they do. For me, my faith was always there for some reason. Even when I still was in Poland, I was 7 years old, the thing that they would always impress on you was that you'd behave. And that's how I kind of remember my mother, that one time I was looking for something. I'm just backtracking a little bit now because how you got to believe as you did. And I was always scared because they kind of always scared you that if you don't behave, you would somehow get punished for it. And that one time I was looking for something and I couldn't find it, and so I must have said a bad word or something. And my mother kind of gave me this little bit of a, well, she tried to correct me that wasn't the right thing to do anyway. But on the whole, my parents treated me well, and I can't really complain. It is just that now you think back over all these years that you have gone through and lived your life, and you think back that it is actually the church that had given me content, purpose, and something that you look forward to, even though sometimes you don't want to be that active anymore. But it's always there. It's always there. We always say that God works in mysterious ways. And in my case, it is, when I think back of my years, I certainly wasn't always this persistent church member. I wasn't always in church, especially in Germany. You didn't go to church every Sunday. But when I came to Canada, it became actually my life at that particular point. And I still remember the people that I'd been together there. The last time I was in Winnipeg, that was when the pastor's wife, like the pastor had died quite a while ago, and his wife died, and that was, I think, three years ago, or is it only 1 year ago? 1 year ago, I think. Yeah, she died, and I remember people that had been in that young people's group, young adult group. That one fella, he was so happy to see me. He was an old man now. And you always think, you know them when they're young, right? I remember that one time because they had kind of brought me into being the chairperson, we call him president of the young adult group, and nobody wanted to have that job. And I don't know, I did it for a couple of years or 3 years even or something. And then finally, that one day we had nominations again for a new president. So I had to deliver the prayer, and I kind of mentioned within the prayer that we shouldn't shirk our responsibilities and take on responsibility. But I mean, that is the truth, because we don't always really want to do certain things, but sometimes you get roped into things, and you know that it's to your benefit, and that's when you kind of experience the guidance of a higher power, of God. God works within your heart, within people's groups and people that work together for the common good. So I must really say that I am thankful that we have the freedom to come together to worship and to so that, like Pastor Laura mentioned again, she believes that only through friendship are we ever going to be united. And I don't know if we will ever experience that on this earth, that there is a different kind of existence besides our physical bodies walking about and trying to be nice and trying to be good. Yeah, so how long did I have?
You did really great, and I wanted to ask you if you're willing to answer questions people might have.
Oh, sure. Of course.
So if you have a question, if you could raise your hand and say it, I'm going to repeat it because we're taping this. Did
any of your siblings come to Canada?
Did any of your siblings come to Canada?
No.
No, not my siblings. No. The only person I really know that kind of lived in Poland in the same vicinity that we lived in is my cousin Maria. But we have never really been that close before, like even in Germany. And when I came to Canada, I actually called her daughter. That was in 97. In 96, we still lived in the apartment. And that's how I found out her address, and I contacted the mother. Yeah. So, no questions? Yes?
So, you were in Poland, and then you got sent to Western Prussia.
Yes.
And then when you came back on kind of just exorbitant wage trail, where did you stop? Say you stopped in between two towns? Were you in Germany at that point? You were coming back from the Russian
village. Okay, so the question is where was your journey actually? So, if you could just kind of recount all the places.
Oh yeah, here. Yeah, I should actually, I was going to do that, but I'm not the greatest presenter, so I forget sometimes the stuff that we wanted.
Well, you were just, how old were you? 7 or 8, right?
Pardon?
You were, how old were you? On the journey, how old were you?
About 13.
No, I was asking how old you were when you were moving about.
12. I was 12 years old, and I was walking beside the wagon all the time. So we started out in Graudenz in Western Prussia. Actually, first of all, I was born, I told you, about 60 kilometers north of Warsaw. And from there, Hitler resettled us into Western Prussia, which is about 100 kilometers, I think, northwest of Warsaw. Have you ever heard of that city, Graudenz? Gdansk, you know the Gdansk, right? The city that's the capital city of Poland, not the capital city, but it's a port city, the city of Danzig. And so we lived in Graudenz, and then from there From there we fled when the Russians came in 1945 in January, and we ended up in Hanover. You must have seen that on the map somewhere.
And about how far was that journey? How far, what distance is that journey?
Oh, that's actually quite a distance. Like I said, we were about 10 weeks on the road with horse and wagon. I think it must have been, Jacobus, I don't know.
Remember, this is war, and the road from stay home.
500, 800 kilometers, maybe? Yes?
So what did you hear, what did you know about the Russians as they were advancing? Was your goal to get back early, or just to get away from the Russians?
Or just to get away from the Russians.
I'm going to repeat the question just so that it's on the recording.
Yeah.
So the question is, what did you know about the Russians advancing? What did you hear? What was your goal? Was it to get back to Germany?
Well, I didn't really hear too much about the Russians. I just heard that some of the people, like some areas were taken before we, like we lived a little bit further in, into Western Prussia. That the soldiers were kind of rough there. There was some raping going on or some beating and stuff like that. So there was some of that, but I'm not really sure. Because when you're 12 years old, you don't pay that much attention to it. Yes?
What did you eat when you were on the road?
What did we eat?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, that's a good question, because there wasn't much around to eat. But we had milk, like, because we had lived on this farm, we had a milk can. Do any of you know what a milk can looks like? I think they're about this high. Must have about 50 liters in there or something like that. And we had hung it on the side of the wagon, and it froze, and so it stayed good for a long time. So we had milk for quite a ways. So that helped us quite a bit. And then we had taken along some of the food that we were able to take. But there were some soup kitchens on the way that we could use that feed. Eat? Yes?
Once you moved to Winnipeg, what did you have to farm? What was your occupation after that?
So what was your occupation in Winnipeg after the farm?
Oh, after the farm? Bricklaying. Oh yes, I took a course in bricklaying. I kind of was going to mention that, but that was my second trade. In Germany I was a miner. I worked in a mine for 6 years. In Canada I had to learn a new trade. So I went 4 years. I had 4 years of apprenticeship. I went to school for the first year 8, second year 6, and the third year 4 weeks. And you had to write an exam, and you had to build something, you know, according to plan. Yeah, that was actually quite something, because when you come from another country and you have to get used to, from decimals, you have to get used to inches and feet. So that was a bit of a change for me as well. But I got it, because we had taken fractions in Germany, so I did get used to it. Yeah, so 4 years of apprenticeship. Yes?
So in the wagon, when you were traveling, how much room was there for personal belongings, or what did you bring?
Yeah, well, there was nothing. We didn't bring anything with us except clothing, and I won't. And we had some food in there, like my mother had some preserves and stuff like that we had for a while. So, and that, when that ran out, then we had to depend on soup kitchens or wherever they were.
Ruby, you said you went to school from 8 to 7, how many years would kids in your range spend in school for the
3 to 4 years? Usually it was 8 years. That was what you call a regular school, like public school, and then you would, a lot of young guys took just another course in a trade, like they picked a trade. like carpenter or cabinet maker or machinist. And I couldn't find, there were no places available to pick a trade at that time, so that's why I went into the potash mine. We got good pay, we got, like I said, these special ration cards, which were really good. Because my dad worked there, but he worked up on the ground, on top. He didn't have to go on the ground.
Right. When you said when Hitler invaded, he moved you from one farm to another farm.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you know why he wouldn't have left you on the original farm? Did he give that? Was it a better farm he gave to someone else?
I think. I'm not even sure what the real reason was, but I think what he wanted to do, he wanted to have all the German people into given area, because Western Prussia was kind of like a corridor. Mm-hmm. You remember the Prussian king, Frederick the Great? Mm-hmm. He had created this corridor. Those are all German, a lot of them are German cities. They have German buildings. I mean, there is a lot there, and that, like, I know I get the German channel, and they talk a lot about the culture in Western Prussia that existed at one time. But then the land was given back to the Polish people, which they deserved.
Yeah, there's a political saying, it goes like this: possession is 9/10 of the law.
Yeah.
So if you put your people someplace, then you get the land.
Mm-hmm. But you were able to survive and set on the other farm in Butchland, eh?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. It was actually better than what we had in Poland. We, like I said, my dad must have been on hard times, because when my mother died, he had to do everything by himself. He's the one that baked the bread. He had to prepare the meals. My sister was only 13 years old. I have pictures here, but I mean, it's no use showing them here, because it's too much trouble.
Well, we'll have time for that too.
Pardon?
We'll have time for that too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what I'd like for you to do is to turn to the person next to you or the people around you and share something that was inspiring to you about Fred's talk. So what inspired you about what Fred has shared?
Well, you know, it's never turns out the way you think it should, but the story was there. So,